This podcast is a copyrighted production of Radio America and is not intended for broadcast. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey. For the next hour, join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. Finances, raising children, and dealing with your husband through his tough times and yours. This is the place to be as Maria and her guests bring you a wealth of information on all of these topics. Now, Maria Bailey on Mom Talk Radio.
It's Mother's Day, the day where we all got to sleep in, right? And we had breakfast in bed, and it was delicious, and we got everything that we could possibly hope for and more, right? Well, I don't know about you, but my alarm went off at 4:30 this morning. And as for breakfast, it was, I think, a yogurt bar on the run. But it's Mother's Day, and it is the one day of the year that I get to do whatever I want. And I actually love to make my husband, don't let him know this, actually do things that he normally wouldn't like to do. So every year we actually go to the beach because my husband hates the beach. So every Mother's Day we spend on the beach, and I had a wonderful day on the beach, and I also had a wonderful day at Walt Disney World. So I got to spend Mother's Day with a lot of my friends at Disney World, and there's no happier place on earth than spending it at Disney World. So I hope you are having a wonderful Mother's Day. We have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things. And we're also going to be talking about ways in which I know some of our listeners are celebrating Mother's Day, because I follow you on Twitter and I follow you on Facebook. So I've been seeing a lot of handmade gifts, which definitely is one of the things that parents and moms in particular really love, love, love to get. And, you know, right about the time our day ends, which is going to be pretty soon, it's time to start planning for Father's Day. So I actually discovered a really cool, like if you're looking for a graduation gift or a Father's Day gift or something, maybe for grandfather, and you just haven't been able to think of anything very cool, I went to a website. It's called thecoolernation.com, thecoolernation.com. And it's white coolers that you can paint. So they're all primed and ready to go. I think they cost like $60, and that includes shipping. And you can have your children like paint their hands on it, or paint a scene, or Happy Father's Day, Grandpa. But very, very cool. And it's called thecoolernation.com. I'm going to paint one actually for my husband for Father's Day. So it's a Mother's Day weekend here on Mom Talk Radio. We're excited to have you. And when we return, we're going to be talking with David Bianchi. He is the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money.
Even supermoms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
I am super excited to talk about a topic that I think we don't talk about enough, and that is money. And we are bringing to you the author of Blue Chip Kids, What Every Child and Parent Should Know About Money, Investing, and the Stock Market. His name is David Bianchi, and I really like this guy. I like what he stands for, except for the fact that he went to Boston College, because, you know, I go to Notre Dame. And we really, there's that one game a year. I just finished buying my football tickets for it. But other than that, I really like him and what he stands for. So I want to welcome David to Mom Talk Radio. Hey, David.
Hi, thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Well, thank you. So, you know, I think that the one lesson that that parents have a hard time teaching our kids is about money. And it's probably the most important lesson we can teach our children, among other things. Why do you think that is?
I think for some crazy reason, it's largely ignored in our country. It's not taught in the schools in most places. A few schools teach it. A few states require it. But by and large, it's not being taught. And I think that's a huge mistake. And I have one child, a boy who was 12 at the time. And I looked at what he was learning in school and what they were going to be teaching him, and it was not going to come up. So I sat down to write some things myself that I thought he should know about money and how to manage money, and one thing led to another, and we ended up with a book called Blue Chip Kids, which is 230 pages long, has 100 different topics, and 165 kid-friendly illustrations.
So I bet you that there's things in there that a parent could actually learn from as well, right?
Oh, there's no question. I have spoken to people all around the country about the book, and one of the consistent themes that comes back from everyone is that parents will claim they're buying it for their kids, but they will secretly read it themselves.
Yeah, I can see where that can happen. So I actually started my kids off really young. We used to go to onestock.com or oneshare.com, and I would let them each on January 1st pick out three companies, and we would buy one share of each of them. And then kind of every time the annual report came, we kind of looked at it from the eyes of a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. And now, like, two out of the four actually, you know, have things set up, and they're doing it on their own at 19 and 20. Which part of finances do you think is the most important? Like, if you're going to start with one thing, most people start with saving, but is there somewhere else we should start?
Well, there's no bad place to start, and if you allow yourself to think too much about it, it can seem so overwhelming that you don't do anything because you don't know where to start. And the book starts out with the very basic premise that you need to save some of what you earn, and you have to live within your means. And that's the way I think kids need to begin the whole concept of learning about money. And from there, you can move forward. You can start to learn about how money is earned. It's earned in different ways, and we discuss that in the book. Then we talk about how to manage money, different ways to manage it through checking accounts, credit cards, debit cards, different places to put your money. And then we talk about ways to invest your money. So it sort of builds on itself when you start out with the very simple premise of save some of what you earn and live within your means.
I'm just wondering, live within your means. Do you think it's possible for a child to learn that if they're watching their parents not doing it?
It's a good point, because that's a problem. You know, there's so much debt in this country that young people seem to think it's just the way America is. And it really is a huge problem. Right now, there's over $1 trillion of student debt outstanding in the United States. And this is debt that was originally taken out by teenagers when they were 18, 19 years old, off to college, signing pieces of paper that they don't truly understand, taking on debt. And now with over $1 trillion of student debt out there, they will never get themselves out from underneath all of this. But the parents are not much better. There's over $12 trillion of household debt outstanding in the United States. And our savings rate in this country used to be 11% of our after-tax income. Today, it's only 4% of our after-tax income. So kids are seeing their parents save less, borrow more, and it's not healthy. And people are just running in place. They're not making forward progress. When you look at the statistics on what families have saved in terms of liquid cash in the bank, they're very small amounts of money, and how much they've put away for retirement, not even nearly enough to support them in retirement. So it's a big problem.
So is the book, like, what would you say is the primary age, or is there a target age for the book?
Well, it started out when I was writing this just for my son. I thought I was going to write 10 pages, put a staple in it, and just give it to him. And he was 12 at the time. So it's written for a seventh grader, and it just kept going and going. But what I've come to find out is adults have been very candid that they like this information in a very simple format. Nobody wants to read a sophisticated financial textbook to try to learn this. They like the simplicity of it. So while originally I thought it was going to be just for teenagers, it has application for adults also.
And I would just wonder, is it written so that, is it mathematical or is it entertaining or what's the style?
The whole thing is entertaining. It's a fun, simple, but educational book. It is not mathematical. It's got 165 cartoons, and you can fly through the pages because we used large type and put at least one cartoon on almost every single page, and it's entertaining. It really seems to be a very effective method of communicating what to many people are financial concepts and money-saving concepts that they just don't get anyplace else.
Right, right. Well, if there was one thing that you would suggest to a parent who's listening today to start doing or to do with their child, what would it be?
It would be to understand that your kids are smarter than you may give them credit for, and just because they're young does not mean that they cannot understand this stuff or that they won't be interested. Don't sell your kids short, because they can and will understand this information if it's presented in a simple, entertaining, and educational manner. And that's what this book does. And if you will spend some time with them and have them read just 15 minutes at a time, that's it. Just put the book away after 15 minutes, but sit down with them after the 15 minutes and discuss what was read. You'll work your way through the book in 1 month, and you will be really surprised at how much they know.
Well, it's a great concept, and I agree. You can never, ever, ever start too early. And even if you're not comfortable with it, at least empower your children. Break the cycle. That's what my thing was. I remember I went to college, and I didn't even know how to write a check. Well, thank you so much, David, for being with us. BlueChipKids.com is the website. Check it out. We have a link to the book on Mom Talk Radio. When we return, we're turning our spotlight on one mom doing some amazing things. So, what better way to follow up a segment on teaching your children about finances than to have a mom in our spotlight on moms today that is going to talk to us about putting together an estate plan? She's Sarah Hawkins, and she is the mom of a 12-year-old. She blogs at sarahfhawkins.com. You can follow her on Twitter at Sarah F. Hawkins. And she's going to talk about estate planning. And I want to welcome Sarah to Mom Talk Radio. So, hey, Sarah, happy Mother's Day.
Thanks, Maria. Happy Mother's Day to you, too.
Well, thank you. So let's talk a little bit about what you blog about. Tell me a little bit about your blog.
My blog, sarahfhawkins.com, that you mentioned, is my professional blog. I'm a lawyer, and I provide information for entrepreneurs, mainly, on how to, you know, successfully navigate some of the legal issues relating to their business. And being that a lot of moms are entrepreneurs, I found that the legal information is not accessible financially to many, you know, mompreneurs. And that's really why I started the blog.
And you're right. There isn't a lot of financial information out there, particularly for mompreneurs. What is your number one advice to them? Like, what should they be thinking about?
I think usually my number one piece of advice is kind of a common sense thing, and it's always read whatever you're going to sign. More often in a situation that somebody puts pieces of information in front of us and says, sign here, and, you know, you don't realize that you've, you know, signed away copyright, or you've agreed to a 12-month when you thought it was a 6-month, you know, various things like that. And so oftentimes we feel like we can't take the time to read something, and we really should.
Well, one of the things that I often see as well is, and you're an attorney, so I'd love to hear your comment on this one, is that sometimes moms don't invest in getting the best advice. And I'll just use myself as an example that, you know, I didn't trademark something that I should have because I thought, oh, well, I could just do it myself instead of paying a trademark attorney to do it. And, you know, a couple of years later, I regretted that. So what would you say about finding the right resources, whether it's an attorney to help you do it or someone else?
I think that that's a really important thing. The difficulty is that often the resources are out of our price range. And when you think of in your situation hiring a trademark attorney, at the time you probably needed to hire one, you weren't really thinking, I should budget $1,000+ for this. It really wasn't in the budget. But years later, that would have been a drop in the hat compared to what you had to undertake at that point in time. And I think that's the difficulty is finding the resources that are accessible and not being ashamed in any way to reach out to our network or other people and simply say, you know, I'd really like to hire an accountant or an attorney, but I don't have a huge budget.
Right.
Could you direct me to somebody? And just being honest, because there are, you know, many attorneys like myself who will discount their fees to make arrangements with somebody, especially, you know, moms who need the help. Often
right.
Nobody wants to, you can't do some of this right. Stuff on contingency.
Right. We only have another minute to talk. Can you tell everyone what they'd find on your website again so that they can go there for the resources?
Maybe we have business information for entrepreneurs, mompreneurs, you know, small businesses. There are things like that. I'm extending out what I'm providing since I'm finding that, as you mentioned, many mompreneurs and entrepreneurs are not getting the legal information in other parts of their lives that they really do need.
You're absolutely right about that. I want to remind everyone that you can find Sarah at sarahfhawkins.com. So thank you, Sarah, so much for joining us today. And I hope you have a wonderful Mother's Day and that your 12-year-old treats you right today because you certainly deserve it. You're helping so many other moms out there in your professional and personal life. So thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, I want to turn our focus one more minute to the things I'm seeing on Facebook that you're doing. I saw one mom who's cooking out in the backyard with her family, and she's enjoying a few steaks I see on the grill there. Share your pictures with me on Twitter at Mom Talk Radio, and we'll talk about them as we go through the show. When we return, we're going to be talking with the author of Grade Transformer for the Modern Student, Upper High School Edition. We'll be talking about dyslexia.
You're listening to a podcast from the Radio America Network. Find more podcasts of your favorite shows at radioamerica.org. Mothers of America, this hour belongs to you. It's Mom Talk Radio with Maria Bailey.
I am very excited to have with us today Barbara Dianis. She is the author of Grade Transformer for the Modern Student, Upper High School Edition. She overcame dyslexia in her real life, or in her own life, and has taught many self-taught strategies and techniques. She's very well educated with master's degrees. She has worked with all sorts of learning challenges, and she's here to tell us how we can help our children to finish the year strong. So welcome, Barbara, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
So before we talk about the end of the year, I just want to step back a little bit because you overcame dyslexia, which I didn't know you could actually overcome it. But I think a lot of parents out there, in fact, I think it's been documented that more children have dyslexia than actually we realize. And in my own daughter, we didn't realized that she was dyslexic until she was in high school. And oh my gosh, did I feel bad about all those times that I'm like, sound out the word, you know, why can't you spell? But can you talk to us, tell me just a little bit about, like, maybe we have a child with learning disabilities or challenges. How do we know if it's dyslexia?
Well, what commonly is symptomatic of dyslexia, if you see a child who's really having difficulty learning how to spell and to read, and they might describe the words as jumping around on the page, or they'll say all of the, you know, lines are moving, or they might have do some transposals of letters and it's consistent. And in their writing, you might consistently see letters that are spelled backwards, words that are spelled backwards. And as they read, they're really having a much more difficult time picking up the reading than it would be normal for a regular child with their average, who has average to above average intelligence. So if you start seeing those red flags, and the teacher probably is as well, that's when it's time to say, well, maybe, you know, if it's, you know, continuing over several months of time, you might need to say, let's check into this and make sure it is not dyslexia or another learning issue that needs to be dealt with.
Well, and also the fact that, you know, there's so many people who, like, teachers don't even know to look for it. And that's just completely right. The frustrating thing. So, go on.
Go ahead. You might also look in, you know, if you watch their graded papers, especially when they're younger or even at any age, if you're just seeing a lot of graded papers coming back with see me or check marks, and the child really truly tried their best and they were not doing as well, that is another red flag to really look for.
Right.
And sometimes
absolutely.
The parent has to be proactive and go to the school or the teacher and say, you know, I'm noticing, you know, maybe my child's grades aren't as high as they should. I'm seeing some graded papers that are consistently showing some level of difficulty when I'm reading with my child or they're practicing their spelling. It's much more difficult than I would think it needs to be.
Yes, absolutely.
It can also happen in math. If you're seeing real difficulty with, you know, changing the numbers around. Like when I was a child, I would not do well in my math because I might see 14 as 41.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about kids overall. And we're in the last, just yesterday I said to my daughter, okay, Mo, come on, you're 4 weeks away till the end and you're on the honor roll. So let's keep it up. Like, let's not give up now. How do we keep them motivated? We worked so hard this whole year and we're faced with those last 4 weeks when, particularly in high school, the seniors are leaving, the classes are half empty, and they don't want to study anymore.
Well, how I kept my students motivated is I reminded them that, you know, very soon you're going to be getting a break. And in the last few weeks of school, believe it or not, learning can really change. And if the students start not really turning in their assignments, not doing as well on a test because they're just kind of, their brains are checked out and they're tired, and we understand that, and they have so many other activities along with graduation in the school year that they do need to participate in, but they have to continue to understand that even though they worked hard all along, that final GPA is not in yet.
Right.
And
right.
You can have, if they just start sliding for a month or 2-3 weeks, they might see a significant drop in their grades that can definitely affect that GPA. And just say, I know it's hard, but you've got, here's your finish line. Your finish line is whatever date. You need to look at that as a time where you can take a little break. But until then, we've got to at least study whatever is normal for them. Start and make sure that they are turning in their assignments, check the grades online to make sure there aren't any surprises. And they might say, no, I'm doing everything. And then you find out at the last minute you have all these missing assignments that the student, even seniors will do that at times, you know, because they are tired and there's so much they're juggling. And sometimes they think they can get by with it, and learning can really snowball very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about, we only have 2 minutes. What would be your greatest tip to carry moms through the end of the year?
My greatest tip is check the grades online every day with their student at whatever age level they're at, and make sure that you're continuing to monitor the study and homework time, and make sure that you just really motivate and say, as soon as you're done, we'll have a little bit of time for fun, but we've got to do this. Make sure they study for their test again in the morning. They quickly review their information, because the brain will randomly discard or file away information in different places while the student sleeps, and so therefore they will improve in their test taking typically if they review in the morning. Again, even if they've studied the night before, just take a few minutes to go over those notes and review, and even drill the student using a whiteboard so that they might have to write a little bit of the answer and orally as well. That also helps the grades considerably.
Well, really good information. There's more at dianaseducation.com. We have a link to it on Mom Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on this Mother's Day. We really appreciate it. And, you know, moms, you are the key to your children's education, because, you know, yes, they learn in school. Yes, we appreciate their teachers, but it's really, I know, you're the ones who have to harp on them, make sure the tests are done, make sure the projects are done. You're the one online checking grades. So way to go, moms. We're almost to the finish line. We're almost in summer. When we return, we're going to be talking with the author of The Journey of the Heroic Parent, Your Child's Struggle and the Road Home.
Even supermoms need a little advice. Here's yours. More of Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Dr. Brad Reedy. He is the author of The Journey of the Heroic Parent, Your Child's Struggle and the Road Home. He is the co-founder and clinical director of Evoke Therapy Programs. He is an experienced psychotherapist and public speaker. He leads seminars on everything from parenting to addiction, and he has many, many accolades, but I want to get them started to talk on the things that matter to us, which is the importance of teaching children how to feel and express their feelings. So welcome, Dr. Reedy, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So getting our kids to talk about their feelings, particularly as they get older, is a very, very challenging thing for moms. How do we start, and how do we do it? How are we successful?
I think two things come to mind. The first thing that comes to mind is to understand that not talking about your feelings is one of the ways that a child maintains his or her identity. So patience is important, and non-judgment in terms of we might want to pry them open, we might want to know what they're thinking, but it's very important for us as parents and mothers to realize that that's a part of what helps them keep their separateness from us. The second thing is the ability to listen, and I know that that's probably so obvious, but I can't tell you how many interactions with parents and children where I coach and I talk to them, and I point out how many times we tell our children not to feel. I was just on a parent session yesterday where after asking their young adult daughter to talk about her feelings, that she was very sad and she was feeling a lot of grief, the first thing that the mother tried to do was take that away by telling her it would be okay. And that's an instinct that most of us have. So learning how to really, really listen, learning how to not dismiss, discount, and talk our children out of us. And it takes a lot of strength, and it takes a lot of practice and discipline to be that present, to be able to listen.
Yes, yes, it does. In fact, I think you have to, as a parent, teach yourself how to be present and listen to your children. And I often challenge parents to look at the white of their eyes when they're speaking to them. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how hard it is to do it. I mean, it's really hard to do.
We get triggered, right? We have our reactions. Our instincts are to make our children not feel pain and sadness. And yet, you know, I treat people with mental health and addiction issues, and the entire goal of therapy is to get people to feel, to get people to tolerate feelings and to find ways to cope with them. And yet the instinct of most of us parents, and I have four children myself, is to remove that pain. So you're right, it's not intuitive, it's not automatic, and it's something we have to be very intentional. I love your skill, I love your tool about the white of the eyes, because it helps people to focus on something other than their own reactions and their own triggers and their own history that comes up, that gets activated when you're listening to a child who's expressing something.
Yes, absolutely. So what is the critical difference, another question, about control and influence in our children's lives?
I think that the biggest difference when I describe and create this paradigm of control versus influence is controlling is trying to get, usually through emotional coercion, guilting, lecturing, intimidating. And I know intimidating is a strong word, but I use it when I'm being lazy or I really want something. I get big, I get loud to try to get my children to do something. And so I think we do things to try to get our children to think and feel and believe what we want them to think and feel and believe, instead of setting up clear boundaries and understanding those boundaries are the lesson, those limits, those consequences are the lessons, and taking a step back. The simple example I give in the book, and there's deeper examples, but of trying to get my young daughter to eat her vegetables, and I start saying things like, you want to be big and strong like your older brother, and we have your favorite ice cream afterwards, and what I'm trying to do is get the outcome that I want. I'm trying to coerce her emotionally, and that's not a very harmful example, but it still illustrates we try to coerce to get our children to feel things instead of saying, here's the limit, here's the consequences, you get to choose. Either way, I'll live with it because I've set it up this way, and I hope you figure it out. And so we have to remove all of that emotionality behind it. And the other examples I give are where we try to shame our children out of their decisions and out of their choices instead of just saying, I get it, I understand where you're going, but here are going to be the consequences if you do.
I think sometimes we say things to our kids that we would never say to our best friends.
I think that's so true. And I remember I was driving with my 12-year-old daughter, and I snapped at her because she forgot to tell me that she was being dropped off at a different part of school. And because I'm louder and bigger than she is, she apologized after I snapped. And I said, you know what, Bella, it's not okay. And she said, yeah, it is. And I was thinking the exact same thing. If I said that to a friend, they would say, hey, look, it's not my fault. You didn't ask me. We hadn't talked about it yet. I was reading. But because we can, we do those things, absolutely.
Right, I know. Your best friend would have said, man, you are a jerk. I can't believe you just said that to me, right?
Exactly.
But you know, I love the consequence thing because I think so many times as parents, we just throw out empty threats at our kids like, oh, if you don't do this, well, I'm going to do this. And you know that you will never do this. And guess what?
Right.
They know that too, you know, and then they wonder later on. I just my favorite saying is, you know, I always go apple tree, you know, like the apple never falls far from the tree. Right. So
right.
If you complain about your job, guess what? Your kid is going to complain about their homework because that's their job, right? So,
right.
So we have like 60 seconds left. What, where should parents go to find out more about you?
You can go to drbradreedy.com or you can go to Amazon to buy the book. And the journey of the heroic parent really is asking parents. The heroic part of it is making a shift between making your life your child's project to making your life your project. It's a shift from fixing your children to fixing yourself. And I think with all heroes' journeys, with all great stories, the biggest challenge is to go inside of ourselves, even though it's told through metaphor and through going into the forest or going on to an adventure. We're really talking about going into the most difficult place to explore, which is inside of ourselves, and that's the heroic journey.
Right.
So you can find it on Amazon or drbradreedy.com.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Brad Reedy. And when we return, we're going to be talking with one woman that saved over 300 babies in Saigon. You know, this next segment is really just totally fitting for Mother's Day. Her name is Leanne Tiemann, and she is nationally acclaimed as a professional speaker, an author, and a nurse who was accidentally caught up in the Vietnam orphan airlift in 1975. Her book, This Must Be My Brother, details her daring adventure to help rescue 300 babies as Saigon was falling. And she has just done amazing things. She's gone on to write a lot of books, including Chicken Soup for the Mom Soul and for the Adopted Soul. And she's here joining us today on Mother's Day, so we're very lucky to have Leanne with us. Welcome, Leanne.
Thank you, and happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Well, thank you, and thank you for everything that you've done for children. Tell us a little bit about Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Adoption. That one gets me because I am the mother of two children that I've adopted.
Oh, gosh. Then you have a special happy Mother's Day to you. This is a fabulous book. We just released it. There was an original version of 5 or 6 years ago, and now it's a new updated version with almost 20 new stories. And they cover every type of adoption from various countries, domestic and international. The stories appeal not only to adopted kids, but adoptive parents and grandparents, birth parents, and every generation. It's just, it was such a joy for me. I read 4,000 adoption stories, if you can imagine,
wow,
in order to create the top 101 in this amazing book.
That's that is pretty amazing. So you're updating the book, and I'm interested in knowing why.
You know, when it was originally sold 5 or 6 years ago, the company was sold right at that very time, and the book got a little bit lost. And the new owners are very committed to this topic and adoption and giving it its very best shot, knowing that it's going to really bless so many lives. People that are considering adoption and people who have adopted, they all feel blessed by these stories.
Well, it is pretty amazing. So can you just, in a couple of sentences, and we don't have a lot of time, just tell us, what was the airlift like? I mean, to take out so many babies out of Saigon and...
Well, it was,
you know,
pretty amazing. It happened 40 years ago, as a matter of fact,
wow,
last month. And I just attended the 40th anniversary. I went to Vietnam thinking I was bringing 6 babies back for adoption in their homes that had been pre-assigned. But by the time I got there, the war had escalated, and President Ford had okayed Operation Baby Lift. And I was greeted with the words, "You're not helping us take out 6 babies, but 300. So we literally put 22 cardboard boxes side by side in the belly of a cargo jet, strapped a seatbelt across the 22 boxes. There were 9 of us to take care of 100 babies. All the way to,
wow,
the Philippines, where we waited for a bigger plane and 200 more babies. And as a matter of fact, the last 4 stories in Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Joy of Adoption, are about Operation Baby Lift.
Have you met any of those babies that you helped airlift out of Saigon?
Yes. At the 25th anniversary, I met 100 of them.
Wow.
And since then, we've had several reunions. And believe it or not, last weekend, I went to the 40th anniversary, and there were 20 more young men and women, some of whom I helped to bring out. I have goosebumps as I,
wow,
tell you that still.
That's amazing. So for those of us who weren't alive during that period, those babies, they were orphaned? I mean, like, where did they come from?
They were. At the end of the Vietnam War, it's tragic to report, there were 700,000 orphans in Vietnam.
Wow.
50,000 of them were Amerasian, half American, half Asian. And those were the priority of the first children that we were trying so hard to get out, because those children were thought not to have been able to survive in Vietnam at the time. So, yes, there were many, many orphaned children. And altogether, with all of the Operation Baby Lift efforts over a 30-day period, 3,000 children were saved.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know, if anybody has a Mother's Day to celebrate today, it's you. And we are so grateful for the work that you did then and the work you're still doing now. Somebody that has totally given her life to motherhood and children. Thank you so much, Leanne, for joining us today on this very special Mother's Day. And I want to thank you guys for joining me, taking some of your time out to be with me on Mother's Day, because I know that you want to be out there barbecuing. I see it. I see it on my Facebook page. So thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll see you again this time next week for more Mom Talk. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.